Hey everyone, and welcome to this very unexpected episode of the Bureau Briefing. Now, this podcast got shut down, pretty much abandoned during the pandemic in early 2020, but this episode was recorded right before everything went off the rails. And before I can just play this episode for you, I have to explain the backstory, a what are the odds story about why this episode is now being played. It starts with me coming back from Owner Camp Costa Rica in early December. And because I waited too long to book my flight back, I ended up flying American. Now, this is an airline I don't fly. Nothing against them. They seem really nice. But their planes are a little bit older, and I'm in a Delta hub, so you know, it's just easier. Well, as I walk up to get to my row, the gentleman who had the aisle seat, I was in the window, was very engrossed in his book. And once I did get his attention, he looked up apologetically, but also with an inquisitive look. And then he got up and I sat down and he asked me what I was doing in Costa Rica with a slight smile. I was like, I was here for an event. And he said, what kind of event? And I said, well, we put on events for folks who run digital agencies and help them get better at managing their business and also give them a support network so that when they're struggling or they've got something great that happened, they're able to share it with folks who understand. Then he asked my name and I said, Carl. And he said, Carl Smith? And I was stunned. I knew he looked familiar. And then he said, my name is Tevi. I was a guest on your podcast right before COVID hit. And he mentioned that we never released the episode because the world shut down. Now, we laughed, but this was like meeting an old college friend unexpectedly. I have to be honest. It was just goosebumpy of, he lives in Israel. I live in America. We are leaving an airport in Costa Rica, and he never flew American either. It was one of the first times he ever did. So all of our mathematicians out there, let me know, what are the odds that two people record a podcast, they live 6,600 miles apart, and end up with events scheduled at the same time, in the same country, in the same tiny little section of that country, and end up sitting next to each other, and the bigger odd, that one of them actually realizes what's happening. So Tevi, love and respect, my friend. When I re-listened to this episode, I was like, we have got to play this for everyone. And I also want to show some quick love to our friends at Parallax. They make amazing software for running your professional services organization. But let's get on with this episode.
Welcome to the Bureau Briefing, a podcast by the Bureau of Digital, an organization devoted to giving digital professionals the support system they never had. Each episode, we're going to talk to a member of our community doing awesome, inspiring things. Now for your host, Carl Smith.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Bureau Briefing. It's Carl, and with us today is Tevi Hirschhorn. How's it going, Tevi?
Going great. How are you?
I'm really good, as everybody knows, because that's what I always say. I'm really good. Now, Tevi, you're part of the community. You're part of the design leadership part of the Bureau community. And we were talking recently about design leadership days, and you shared a video with me that you had a talk that you had given called How to Love Your Users So Your Users Will Love You Back. And I literally fell in love with the way that you delivered an amazing message. So before we dive into that, will you share with everybody just a little bit of your background and how you got to where you are now?
Sure. So my education is actually in animation. I'm a self-taught web designer. I didn't pursue animation, but I did learn the love of storytelling and acting and empathy. And that evolved into a career in user experience. And now I run product for an e-commerce company, Resident Home.
Now, this makes a lot of sense because I know looking back at your history, you had done work with Paramount Pictures and Disney and Time Warner and Comcast. So when you were doing work with them, was that more on the animation side or was that when you were already coming over to the UX side?
That was actually on UX. I was helping them with their streaming solutions. They were all trying to offer content on devices, every device, and they were using my employer at the time to create their apps.
There you go. And they were probably playing catch up as well, which is like Netflix. Everybody was chasing Netflix. And then when you say every device, just because of other people that I know in the community, it's like, we don't think about how hard it is to design streaming for the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One and then older devices and then crazy devices all over the world. So what was that like? Like, how many different devices did you have to take into account?
Well, I had at one time like over a dozen devices on my desk, various types of TVs, Samsung and Android TVs and Apple TV. But even more than just the different kinds of devices, what was really interesting was how we would manage families on devices and the rights management and the content controls for families. So that was really the more complex stuff that we had to deal with.
And that's so true. Being a dad and having two teenage daughters, it's one of those things. My wife and I, it's, you know, four separate accounts is just ridiculous. At the same time, there's this sense of, I don't want to say privacy, like I'm not looking at anything I shouldn't be, or my kids aren't, or whatever, but it's also just this, well, this is my stuff and this is your stuff. So there are a tremendous number of angles you have to look at that, both from price sensitivity and just empowering the individuals within the family, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I actually have five kids, so we've got even more.
Whoa. Devices. Well, this must be an old photo because you look like you're 17, man.
Oh, thank you.
You have five kids?
Yeah, oldest is 12.
Wow. Well, good for you. So I can appreciate then how you have the empathy for a family who's both trying to, you know, I don't want to say necessarily make ends meet, but be smart about their money. And at the same time, you know, have a little entertainment.
Exactly.
So when I was watching the video, I think the thing that got me initially, and this was just kind of the way that you both hooked people into the conversation, but at the same time, you established a really strong message and you asked this question, are you in a relationship? And I can get it from you already, just hearing you talk about, you know, the UX side of what you're doing, even though you had those devices, that wasn't your focus. We're all in relationships, and the relationship you were talking about was really with a website or with technology in general, right?
Well, yeah, but I think that we're very intimate with our devices and our technology and all the apps and software and websites that we use.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's definitely it, to the point where sometimes we're so intimate with them, we forget other people might be in the room.
Totally.
So how did you come up with, just when you were putting that presentation together, what was it that made you want to focus on the relationship aspect?
Well, I think I kind of got sick of this hearing all the time from every company, every client, you know, we love our users. We love our customers, and this whole, like, everyone's professing how much they love you. But they'll do anything to get you to buy. Like, that's not really a loving relationship. And
right.
As I started to like explore more, I'm like, this is actually an awful way to get into a relationship. All the backhanded techniques, all the dark UX patterns that are employed, all the manipulation, it's too much, and it's not a loving relationship. And I think that people who say that they love their users should pause and look at what they're doing and really decide, are what they're doing something that, is that something that they would do in a relationship with a real person that they think they love? And if not, then they should question if they really hold that value that they love their users true. And it's okay not to love your users, but don't pretend it.
That would be the best. A company that says, well, we love ourselves more, but we like our users, right? We need you. But what a great statement, man.
Even the whole thing of calling your customers users, like the only people that call their customers users are drug dealers and
drug
startups.
Dealers. Yeah, I knew you were going there. But it is kind of that same thing, right? I love where this episode's going. It's like, hey, let them try it for free and see who comes back, right?
Yeah, I'll join you.
So I'm just curious, when you were working with some of your clients, and in no way am I saying that any of the clients that you worked with were in that camp, of saying that, you know, they love their users, but they didn't. But I can appreciate also where a company is like, I mean, they're being held to certain metrics, KPIs, whatever you want to call it. And their focus is on maximizing the return or increasing the conversions. How were you able to help them break that and step back?
Well, sometimes you can't convince them to break it. It requires big picture thinking and like a long view to really get there. Zappos has been like that from the beginning. They love their customers. They really try to show it in every way. And there's stories about how legendary their customer service is. They get it and it worked out well for them. Not every company can operate like that.
Well, and I think it's also, you know, I'm thinking about the book Delivering Happiness when you mentioned Zappos. And I remember one of those stories was the person who called Zappos because they wanted a pizza.
Right.
Right. Like they're in Vegas and it's late and somebody just said, you know what? Zappos customer service is so great. You just call them, tell them you want a pizza. They're going to get you the pizza. It doesn't have to have anything to do with shoes and they'll take care of it. And sure enough, they did. Right.
Yeah. That was actually Zappos employees themselves calling Zappos for the pizza.
Oh, that's right. You're absolutely right. Well, and that's it, right? If you look at Tony Say, I think I'm saying his last name right. If you look at the way that he ran that, and maybe that's part of it, it was ingrained in their culture from the beginning.
Exactly.
That they had to love their user. It was not started as a company with one or two letters on the stock exchange 400 years ago that's now playing catch up. But their whole culture has always been quarterly profits.
Exactly.
So when you find that you can't help a client, but you've still got to do the work, do you just try to get through the best stuff that you can?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, this is a job. Mm-hmm. And the goal is to help customers and clients and employers accomplish their business mission. What the talk was about was just to kind of raise awareness to not just business owners, but designers everywhere should just know what it means to love your customers, and just they should at least take a second look at what they're doing and ask themselves, hey, is this a nice thing to do? Is this controlling or manipulative, or is this something the customer will appreciate?
You know, it's a whole other angle on ethical design as well.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. We've had some different people on the podcast and different people at events who have, you know, talked about the ability to weaponize a product. You know, like you might not realize that you're giving somebody the ability to stack rank people and do all these other things. But at the same time, and this is part of what you're talking about with the dark patterns, is taking advantage of people who may not even realize. And I will say, I see that in some current apps right now that you can tell. It's back in the day, we would call something a trick through or something like this. And even then we were calling it something that it acknowledged it was not good, but we would still do it. I mean, I never did, except maybe for one time with the NFL. It was a whole different thing. But when I think about that, I also think about, I'm just going to pick on TikTok for a second. TikTok on their homepage, when they bring up an ad, they put skip ads in the upper right, when normally your navigation's at the bottom. And they time it so that if you go to click on skip ads, that disappears right before you hit it, and it tricks as a hit on the ad. Which they then share with their advertisers, I'm sure, look at all these people clicking on the ad.
Wow.
But it's almost perfectly timed, or I'm that slow that I forget every time. But it's just one of those things that cracks me up about that. And then I've seen, you know, it's also scroll blockers or, you know, all those types of things that I think really, yeah, it's just, you're not loving anybody. You're just trying to convince them to do something, right?
Exactly.
So what are some of the successes that you've had? Like when you do have a client that just leans in and goes, right, we had forgotten that.
Well, I mean, it's come up actually quite frequently, and it does happen. Like if we'll say, hey, if we're filtering out reviews here, then that's not being fully honest. Is that showing that we love our customers or our users? And then there'll be a conversation, and sometimes, you know, you're right. We really should show all of our reviews, or, you know, things like that. And it happens, and it's usually small wins. And I think it's those small wins that actually do add up to a loving relationship, because there isn't one big grandiose thing that you can do to create a good relationship in anything in life. So I think it's all those small little things that add up.
Yeah, again, totally agree. It's a mindset, right? It's not a technique or it's not a checklist. It's a mindset.
Yep.
So I'm curious, what is your day-to-day like? Like in your role now, are you still talking a lot? Are you out there speaking? Are you sharing a lot of your thoughts around how to love users? Or are you still in the front lines, like doing the work?
So unfortunately, I've been really busy with my regular job. I've not been able to speak much. I actually also started writing and illustrating children's books, so that's taking the rest of my time.
Okay, we're going to have a vote for coolest person who's been on the podcast. Talk about that for a second. When obviously, you've got 5 kids, you said under 12, I think. So was that part of what started it? You were like, I want to do this for my kids? And you can say no, but you're going to sound like a real jerk. So I just set you up. I'm sorry.
No, actually, I totally did. I wrote the book for my youngest son. So he's the middle child. And he was kind of struggling with his place in the family. He always felt kind of small and not quite heard. So I wrote this book like to empathize with him. And he really does like the book. And it's been really rewarding for me to watch my kids, you know, enjoy the book.
So what was the process like for writing the book? Because I've talked to a lot of people who've written business books, or they've written even a biography. I've talked to people, but never a children's book. So what is that process like for you to get in the right mindset?
So it's really hard because, you know, working for a startup, it's really demanding and it's hard to find that time. So it was all about setting a very good schedule. Instead of having a goal to finish a certain number of pages a day, it was more about setting a certain number of days per week that I would work on the book, and just creating more of a routine and a habit around it, as opposed to setting very specific goals, which is sort of the opposite of what I do in my day job. Like as a product manager, I have to have clear milestones with dates, and you got to ship at that date. So it was very different, but that's ultimately what let me publish. And now I'm almost done with my, not almost done. I finished writing. I did layout of the second book.
And so are you doing the illustrations or the graphics as well?
Yeah, I'm doing all the layout and illustration as well.
Now, how long did you wait, or did you share while you were working on it with your son, the middle son?
I shared them when I finished the sketches. So I had all the layout and sketches done, and I shared it with them and tested the story on and pacing with them.
And I mean, okay, so at that age, like I had somebody, a friend from DoubleClick, that's how long ago this was, who told me once that the first 10 years are what he called the God years, right? It's when your kids just think you're a God. They're just nothing you do wrong. And then from like 10 on, it starts slow. And then around 12 or 13, those are your idiot years. So he told me, he's like, if you're going to start your own company, do it for those 10 years when you're a God and you can be around your kids. But as soon as they start to roll their eyes, it's like, go ahead and plan your world tour. Like, it's okay. You're an idiot now, so you can go do your thing. So I think you're going to maximize your God years, man. It's like, if you can write these books, and obviously publishing is easier now, but if you can write these books and get them published and your kids know that that's like for them, oh my, I like you even more now. So what is that like? Do they tell their kids? Have you gotten copies of the book for the other families that you're friends with, or how does that work?
Yeah. So it's, I'm selling it on Amazon, but actually it was interesting when I first published it, my daughter, who's in second grade, told me to stop selling the book. And I said, why you don't like the books? Like, no, I do like it. I said, well, why should I stop selling the book? And she's like, because I don't want my friends to see it until you come to my class. So I was like, oh, okay. So I came to her class and I handed out coloring pages from the book, and I had a whole presentation, and her friends asked how I did the illustration. I brought my Wacom stylus with me and explained the whole process. It was a lot of fun.
That's amazing. Now, how old is your daughter?
So she's in second grade. She's 7.
Okay. So you went in and shared with the class. What an amazingly sweet moment when she didn't want them to see it beforehand. That's yeah, so wonderful.
Definitely felt that God mode.
Yeah. And so you've got it published, you're selling it on Amazon. How is it doing?
It's actually doing pretty well. I stopped all ads and marketing around it.
Okay.
I've been trying to finish my next two books and I've gotten a lot of reviews on it. It's doing quite well, but I figure once I have three books out, it'll be a lot easier to kind of set up a virtuous cycle where they could each feed into the other and it'll be a lot easier to market.
Well, it's also, and I'm sure you know this, but it's also some positioning theory, right?
Exactly.
It's not, am I going to buy Tevi's book? It's which of Tevi's books am I going to buy?
Exactly.
That is so exciting. And here we are talking about users and technology. Dude, you're writing kids' books for your own kids, and then they're telling you not to sell them. This is so wonderful. So what is the next book about? Like, the first book was kind of focused around your middle child, you said, your son. And then, so was that kind of around how they fit in the family, or what was kind of the storyline?
Well, it's not a whole long story.
Okay.
It's more about how he always kind of felt small and wanted to be older. That's kind of it. It's like it's not fair that his sister is always older. That's the one.
Oh man. So my two girls are 18 and 16 now.
They're, and I my oldest the wrong is 22 reading months level older. For them.
Well, I don't know, honestly, no, but they're 22 months apart. And there were always those 2 months when Alyssa, my youngest, she would be like, okay, Kaylee's 9 and I'm 7, but now I'm 8. I could catch her. This
yeah.
could work. You know, and it just doesn't make sense. I mean, even today, sometimes it I can kind of see that and I'm like, wait a second, I'm catching up to my brother? How is this happening? But that's kind of a funny moment in kid life.
Exactly.
So, okay. So that was the first book. What's the next one on?
So the next one is about a little girl who's got big ideas.
Well, you know what, Tevi, I really appreciate you being on the podcast today, and I'm going to get you back once we can find out what some of those big ideas were.
Definitely.
Wonderful. And everybody, we're also going to work really hard to get Tevi out at one of the events, because I really want to bring this talk about loving your users out to the community. So hopefully we'll get to see him soon.
Sounds great.
And with that, we will see you next week. Have a great one, everyone.